You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
He's just going to look at the waveform and see that flat line.
He's good like that. It's like Tron, where he's able to just like, or The Matrix.
I was going to say The Matrix.
Where they're, like, they're able to look at just all those ones and zeros and like, do you know what this is?
Blonde.
It's the blonde. And
redhead.
I'm like, what? How do you even know? It's just the bullshit of movies.
No, I feel that way sometimes when I'm editing, because it's like, there's an option in Final Cut Pro where you can put up the little thumbnails of the video on the clip in the timeline to see that novices, youngsters, these kids who didn't grow up with nonlinear editing will do. Yeah. Not me. I turn that shit off.
I've had to use that just a little bit when I edited a couple of the game videos.
It's Bush League, man.
I'm no good. Welcome to the 8-Bit Go Nuts. This is an 8-Bit. What fucking podcast are we doing?
Who knows anymore?
This is the Editing Bay on the Next Wave Radio Network. We are your editing baiters. My name's Joe.
And I'm Joel.
And we have a doozy of a movie that we're going to talk about this week.
I'm so glad. Is this the first episode where we're doing a movie that you did not see before going into this?
Yes, I think so. Well, I hadn't seen FDR. Before going into
it. Oh, that's true. That's true. That was a Jeff pick. He's giving a fist pump over here in the corner because we both recommended that movie and Joe decidedly did not.
I did not like it. But no, we were trying to figure out what we wanted to watch. And I know I had brought up The Perfect Weapon on the Facebook page. And I think there was like a, I don't have that movie, Joe. And I was like, well, shit, we can do whatever. What do you have? And you threw out like Cool World and... what else did you
It was another animated movie. Oh, yeah. Well, anything from Don Bluth post Secret of NIMH, because he had some stinkers out there, man, in the 90s.
Hey, and American Tail was okay.
American Tail is great. Even the sequel I will stand up for. And then even All Dogs Go to Heaven isn't bad, but he had like a Troll in Central Park, Rockadoodle.
Yo, you better watch it with Rockadoodle.
Rockadoodle is not good.
Rockadoodle was awesome.
Awful.
Maybe we'll talk about that one.
Okay, that'll be a future episode. But I wanted it. We haven't done, we're 7 episodes in now. Eight if you're counting the Street Fighter debacle from last week. And we haven't done like an animated movie yet. And there's some bad animated movies out there.
There are, but would this count as an animated film?
Well, over 50% of it is not human. I would say.
Right.
It's kind of like the Roger Rabbit of its time. Have we even announced what this movie is
yet? We haven't. It was the only movie that you suggested in that list that was actually on Netflix. And
that's right.
Why I was like, okay, guess we're doing this one. What one was it?
It's called Monkey Bone. And I want to say it came out in 19... I didn't look this up. It's 1997
I think it was 2000.
Oh, no.
I would
you're
actually,
right. 2001. Because it felt like the 9/11 of movies that year. It's pretty bad. Sorry.
They should put that on the cover.
The 9/11.
Of movies, of Joel films. Bernson, Next Wave Radio.
Well, here's the thing. So if you don't know about this movie, this is like a Who Framed Roger Rabbit sort of live action meets animation, but it's not traditional 2D animation like they did with Roger Rabbit. It's using stop motion animation.
Uh-huh.
Some people call it claymation, even though that's incorrect. This isn't clay.
It's very Nightmare Before Christmassy.
In fact, it's so Nightmare Before Christmas because the same director directed both movies.
Yeah.
Directed by the name of Henry Selick.
Yes.
Who also went on to do Coraline and
The Corpse Bride. Didn't he do The Corpse Bride?
Did The Corpse Bride and most recently Paranorman. I love those three movies we just mentioned.
Uh-huh.
Also with Nightmare Before Christmas, classic, of course.
Right.
I think he works better in animation and should stick to that realm.
This is what I think he works better in. I think he works better when he's got a writer who knows his shit. With Coraline, he had Neil Gaiman.
Yep, that's right.
With Corpse Bride and Nightmare Before Christmas,
that's right.
Tim Burton.
Uh-huh.
Who wrote this piece of shit? This movie... I'm not gonna hide it. I'm not burying the lead here. This movie was fucking awful.
It's pretty bad.
Well, I mean, you already said it with the 9/11 of films.
But you know, I hadn't seen it in, I guess, 12 years because I think I saw it on video right when it came out because I was excited about it. Again, Henry Selick, he's making his first foray into live action.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of lukewarm on Brandon Fraser, but again, he hadn't done The Mummy by that point. I think it was only, or maybe he had.
I can't remember. I think he had done The Mummy.
Maybe
before
he did. I know he was still riding high on Biodome. Dome and Encino.
He wasn't even
in
Biodome.
Encino Man is the one I'm thinking of. I knew there was a Pauly Shore.
Yeah, and like School Ties with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon.
Oh, dramatic turn. Yeah. No, he's good when he does drama. I don't feel like he's done that in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie may, if we look back at movie history, be the beginning of the end
for
Brendan Fraser.
And you know what? That's what I was thinking. The moment there's a part in the film where he's got like some business meeting he's got with some dudes at a table. And at one point he says, like, in monkey land, we don't shake hands. We rub our bottoms against each other. And that I was like, and that is where his career completely took a nosedive.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Well, we should set that up then, because that's a seminal scene in this film.
Okay, so Brendan Fraser plays this guy named Stuart Miley, which totally struck me because his initial, his first initial and last name is Smiley.
I think that was intentional, yes.
Okay, because and they never ended up doing anything with that. And you're going to find, and we'll explore this later, there are so many things that they set up and then never pay off later in the film.
Yeah.
But he plays this cartoonist who's created a creature called Monkey Bone, and it looks like he's kind of on his way to making it big. You know, it's about to become like the Garfield of wacky cartoons. Yep. He's about to get syndication deals and merchandising, and he just doesn't want to worry about it right now. He's focused on proposing to his girlfriend, played by Bridget Fonda.
That's right. Looking hot, by the way.
She
smoking
looks
hot.
Really good in this film.
Yeah.
And even like every time they shot her, like, there was some kind of, the camera loved her in this movie.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, it was a shitty movie, but she was gorgeous in this whole movie.
That dress that she wears in the third act, too, it's just like somebody had to pour her into that.
Yes, sir.
It's fantastic. So see it for her. Yeah.
I don't know if it's worth that.
You're
see,
probably right.
You could see anything else with Bridget Fonda.
That's true. Point of no return from 96.
So he gets ready to leave this this convention or this meeting or whatever that's going on.
Yeah.
And they've loaded his car up with all this merchandise. He has this huge inflatable of Monkey Bone in his car. And it ends up inflating with them still in it. And it hits the gas and he's reversing into a studio or whatever. The car crashes.
Right.
And it puts him in a coma.
Yeah. She is unscathed, by the way, so that is some miraculous passenger seat he has in his car.
Right? And so in his coma, he goes into, like, nightmare land.
That's right. I'm going to back up because...
Please do.
They do a good job. Okay, so I remember seeing this initially, and one of the reasons I wanted to watch it again was to see if it was actually as bad as I remember it being. I thought maybe there was some hidden message there or it was more artsy than I was willing to take in at the time. We're just prepared for, you know, because 2001, I was just a kid.
Yeah.
No is the answer to that. It's still as bad as I remember it. But also, I liked at the beginning, because they kind of set it up. They introduce the Monkey Bone character and the genesis of it. And they kind of do it in cartoon form, 2D cartoon form.
Very Savage Steve Holland style, like One Crazy Summer.
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. And so it's like... He's invented this character whenever he's like shamed, like he has an erection in grade school, looking at his teacher's flabby arms, which is really disturbing in its own right.
Yeah.
And so he invents this character to kind of like shield himself from pain every time he's in shame. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is a new dimension that I probably didn't pick up on the first time, or I don't remember it anyway. I kind of like where this is going, and this will come up later.
Uh-huh.
Unsatisfying how it plays out, but for a moment there, I was like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing.
It does start off really well, and you do get the feeling like, oh, okay, this Monkey Bone thing is going to be a shield. It's going to be protection for something that's going to be coming up later in the movie, and ultimately, the shield ends up becoming the foil. It becomes... You know, it becomes the thing that he's fighting against the entire film. Well, I can't even say the entire film because he's in coma land or whatever.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the real world where Megan Mullally, who plays his sister, is like in the hospital and she's, oh, our father was on life support for like a long time and we promised ourselves we wouldn't be put on life support, that we would, you know, eventually pull the plug.
Yeah.
Her character was like way too concerned about pulling the plug, like almost to the point of like... ecstasy, like she was delighted at the prospect of pulling the plug on him,
and
they never explain why.
Yeah, the whole time I was waiting for like he's got some life insurance or something, or she's not really his sister, or there's some. What is her motivation? Why does she want to kill her brother so badly?
What?
And we never find out.
They never say it.
Very disappointing. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And the only thing you get, the only payoff you get, is when the Brendan Fraser character finally wakes up. She passes out. Like, that's it.
That's her comeuppance.
We never see Megan Mullally again in the rest of the film.
Yeah. No, that's true. We don't, do we?
No, I don't think so. If I am, please correct me. Yeah. But we've skipped a whole bunch of stuff here.
That's
okay. He goes into Nightmare Land.
Which is kind of like a Tim Burton-ish Beetlejuice afterworld sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, half the people are in just makeup, and the other half are, like, in these crazy puppeteer-looking costumes that... I understand it's supposed to be nightmarish because this is kind of like coma land. It's not his coma land, though, right? Because he's sharing it with other people.
Apparently, he shares it with other people. Like, that's what doesn't make sense to me, that, like, he's in a coma.
With Stephen King.
But he's in coma land.
Yeah.
Which also neighbors death land.
Yes.
And you get to both through a roller coaster,
yeah,
apparently.
A quick trolley ride.
But, yeah, that's what kind of threw me, that fact that he's in a coma, but he's kind of in a coma space with everybody who's in a coma.
Yeah, which apparently there's only, like, what, a couple dozen people in comas?
I guess. Now. Apparently Edgar Allan Poe is still in a coma.
And Stephen King.
And yeah. Stephen King?
Yeah.
This must have been right after Stephen King was hit by the van or something.
Oh, I guess. Ooh, that's dark if that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense.
I think so. Oh, it's my just, God. There were just so many things that didn't make sense. It was like the writer and the director at points were like, oh, this would be fun to put in.
Yeah.
This would be kind of fun to put. Hey, say this because that would be a fun reference. Shit that you could tell had to have been thrown in after the fact that studios were either pushing for or, again, that the director was like, oh, this would be a fun ad lib. Throw this in here. It reeked of inexperience.
Yeah. It's Bush League.
Oh, yeah. Totally. like my work on Final Cut Pro. So he ends up meeting Monkey Bone.
Yes. Which is his, like, alter... It's his dual personality.
His alter ego,
yeah,
I guess?
Yeah, it's a nice way of saying it.
So, like, Monkey Bone's been performing, I guess, in this place. Like, on stage, doing, like, lounge acts?
That's what it seems like.
Explain to me what the hell's going on in Coma Land, please.
Well, there only appears to be, like I said, about a dozen people there, when in reality there should be thousands. But, uh-huh. Yeah, I'll forgive that. There's crazy... Like, apparently, so everybody who is in a coma has these, you know, hallucinations or their internal, like you said, sidekick or their alter ego inhabits this world as well.
Uh-huh.
And so Monkey Bone is his. It's voiced by John Turturro, by the way, and it sounds like he recorded all of his dialogue and then it's sped up.
Yeah.
You know, like a 75 record on 45 or vice versa.
I almost thought it was Joe Pesci a couple of times.
It has a bit of a Joe Pesci feel to it. And I actually think John does a pretty good job with what he's given.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's a great cartoon voice.
Yeah.
And has he done others? He should if he hasn't.
I don't know if he has, but no, you're absolutely
Pixar
right.
Needs
His voice
to,
performance is really well done.
Pixar needs to drop Cliff Clavin from Cheers and get John Turturro on the payroll over
He's
there.
He's an institution, John Ratzenberger.
I know, but like, all right, they're just squeezing him in there. He has naked pictures of John Lasseter or something holding over his head. I want to be in Cars 3.
Oh my gosh, nobody wants to be in Cars 3.
No, please. Please don't make that picture.
I wouldn't rather see Monkey Bone 2. So,
no.
So you find out that some people are able to get, like, free passes to get out of Coma Land.
Yeah, that's how they wake up.
And so they try to figure out how to do it, and they have to go undercover to Death Land to do this. Like, he had to meet, like, the god of nightmares.
Yes.
I don't even know if I'm getting these names right. There's the god of nightmares. I can't remember his name.
Oh, is that a famous actor?
Yeah.
He looks like Arsenio Hall, he's in a little devil suit, and they're totally doing that effect where he's, like, he's on his knees in, like, a green screen outfit,
uh-huh.
And they've built this devil costume around him with the little peg legs or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's, all the time, the actor's walking on his knees, but the arms and head are, like, full-size human, and so it's really, that's one of the bigger problems with this. It feels really low budget.
It does.
It feels like this should have been, like, not 100 million, but, like, they could have easily spent that money, had better-looking effects. They did it half-ass. Everything looks cheesy, and like uh-huh. I was saying before, I know they're supposed to be nightmarish, but they just look not well done. They look like the Yoda puppet from Phantom Menace.
You know what? It's all done in darkness to hide what, you know, most of the flaws. Could you imagine seeing those effects in light?
Full light, yeah.
It would have been horrible.
Well, I also saw this in HD, which
I
didn't see it that way the first time, obviously, because we didn't have VHS HD. That doesn't help either. It's like Cameron Diaz going to HD.
Oh,
you
God.
Realize she needs an extra layer of makeup.
What a nightmare.
Cover those pop marks.
So he goes to see the God of Nightmares,
yes.
Who tells him you need to go to Deathland and steal one of those free passes to get out.
That's right, because we've seen this happen. An old guy was in a coma. He got a free pass from some sort of...
A Grim Reaper
The Ghost
something.
Of Christmas Future is what it looks like. And then he gets sucked up into... I do like this. I like when somebody wakes up from Coma Land. There's like a bust of Abraham Lincoln, and it looks like they're underwater. All right. There's some really creative stuff going on here.
Visually, yes.
The set design, maybe not so much the costumes, but there were really big ideas here. Uh-huh. And so this, the bust of Abraham Lincoln, his mouth opens and a beam of light comes. And so anytime anybody leaves Coma Land, they get sucked up into that.
Into the Great Emancipator.
That's right. That's something you haven't seen before.
No. And you know what? Again, that's clever. A lot of the visual stuff that was going on, like effects-wise, there were some clever visuals that were going on. But at the same time, then you had like Rose McGowan in a cat suit.
Oh, I'm not going to complain about that.
But why?
Who cares? She's pretty really? Smoking. No, you're right. It doesn't make sense. And again, this is this. Why are half of these people in costumes and the other half are humans?
And that's one of my big problems is that they never really fully explain Coma Land. Like when he's there,
yeah.
They don't fully explain what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, you're just kind of there. And then the Brendan Fraser character just kind of accepts that he's there.
Very quickly.
Yeah. And just sits at a bar and he's just drinking his little thing. And then he has a cartoony chase with Monkey Bone where he's like, get in the pack.
Yeah.
As if that's a bit that they've been doing forever.
Yeah. Well, it comes up later. So that's a setup for...
It's a bad setup.
Yeah.
It's a horrible setup because you didn't establish that earlier. Like in the cartoon that like there's a... And in fact, there is the character, the cartoon character.
Yeah.
Who Monkey Bone comes out of the pack and it's like, uh-oh, it's Monkey Bone. But at no point do I remember the cartoon character saying, get in the pack.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if they had established it there, then I would have been like, oh, okay, that's a bit. And that's why we're doing this again.
You bring up a good point. A good problem here is, or a bad problem, is the fact that they never kind of set up the... Because immediately when he goes into Coma Land, he hates Monkey Bone.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, in the first scene, it's like... This is this character he created. You'd think he'd be a little more endearing to him.
Yeah.
And I know there's kind of this, I'm selling out. There's all this merchandising. Dave Foley, who puts in a pretty good performance,
yes.
Although again gets naked in this movie. Uh-huh. I feel like I've seen Dave Foley naked more than I've seen him with clothes on.
Yeah.
Just between Kids in the Hall and other movies he's done where he gets half naked. It should not be seen. I'm going to put him in the Bill Cosby category, which is things you can't unsee. But I never want to picture what you look like underneath clothes. Anyway, we don't understand why because he immediately hates him and he's tired of him in Coma Land.
Yeah.
And it's like, but this is your creation. You've built this. You're going to get out of your coma and continue to interact with this character.
He didn't just create it. It was a product of love.
Yeah.
Like, Bridget Fonda was like, oh, you should stop drawing all these, because he used to draw like a lot of nightmarish, dark photos. And that's
right.
Kind of why like Coma Land is all these different creatures or it's all these different things. In fact, he goes into a version of that painting that
I love
show.
That one from his subconscious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But then she goes into this whole spiel again, something that we never come back to where she's like, wow, how did he go from drawing this to this? Her friend asks her and then she says he changed hands.
Yeah.
And what? I got him to change hands. He draws Monkey Bone left-handed.
And that's what came
out. And I'm like, oh my God, that's kind of a cool little story.
Thank you, right?
That's cute. And so you think like this character's a labor of love. This character should have been a little bit more endearing or at least misunderstood.
Yeah.
But Monkey Bone is just straight up malicious.
he starts off at best, he's like a nuisance, a comical nuisance. And at worst, he's like Brendan Fraser's worst nightmare, literally.
Yeah.
So you never see that kind of dichotomy between, I need him, I accept him as half of my personality,
yeah.
But I have this love-hate relationship.
You don't
it's
get,
just hate.
You don't get the Eddie Roger relationship like from Roger Rabbit.
That's great.
Where Roger got on Eddie's nerves because of something that was built into Eddie's backstory.
And then we find out in Act 2.
And then we find out, exactly. We find out, but they're misunderstood. They grate on each other's nerves. They even fight.
Mm-hmm.
But they end up seeing eye to eye at the end, and you get why they feel about how they feel about each other.
Yeah.
But then they come to terms with each other, and that builds an overall better arc.
Right.
This, they just kind of manufacture drama just for the sake of having drama, just for the sake of having a scene where Brendan Fraser's yelling, and there's a cartoon character that's yelling, and people are going, what? What's going on? They end up going into Death's domain and stealing a free pass.
And who is Death played by?
It's played by Whoopi Goldberg, which is like that.
What the fuck is Whoopi Goldberg doing in this movie?
What the fuck is anybody doing in this movie? It's a horrible movie. The guy, what's his name, who played Sandman in Spider-Man 3 plays her
right-hand
man.
Thomas Hayden Church.
Yeah, Thomas Hayden Church.
He's got a couple of good one-liners.
There's so many people in this movie. There's so many bad At one point, and this is later on in the film, but Harry Knowles
Harry Knowles from Ain't It Cool News.
Yeah. It was almost like the filmmakers were fishing for a positive review from Ain't It Cool.
And that motherfucker, who I've met, by the way, and he's nice, but I remember when... Okay, so I used to be an avid Ain't It Cool News reader.
Uh-huh.
If you haven't checked it out, it's a news website. But he's very like ingrained And he kind of started his career as kind of being like, I'm on the outside. I'm not Entertainment Weekly. I'll tell you what movies are really about, you know? And
yeah.
He knew a bunch of people on the inside.
And he was in Monkey Bones.
But somewhere around the 2000s, maybe late 90s, like he stopped being an outsider. He's kind of like the Michael Moore of the movie industry.
Gotcha.
He tries
Even
to
though
build
Michael
himself.
Moore is the Michael Moore of the movie industry.
That's true. Well, but I mean, like, he's of documentaries specifically. This guy, like, tries to build himself as, hey, I'm one of you guys. But really, he's on the inside.
Yeah.
So much so that he got a role in this movie.
Monkey Bone.
But I remember him like writing about it, you know, when it was in production, you know, years in advance or at least months. And that kind of helped feed my fervor to want to see this because, like, hey, fucking Harry Knowles is in it. He's vouching for it. Right. It can't be that bad.
Yeah.
So that's when I fell out of love with Harry Knowles.
And rightfully so.
You fat red bastard.
Oh my God. He's probably having another foot taken off because of the diabetes. Whatever. I'm diabetic. I can say this. Okay. So they go into Death's Domain.
Yeah.
And they try to steal a free pass. They end up succeeding.
From Whoopi.
They take a pass from Whoopi. And while they're trying to escape, Brendan Fraser falls into like his nightmare land because in the real world, Bridget Fonda finds out, oh my God, his sister's going to pull the plug.
Yes.
We need to fill him up with this nightmare juice that I've concocted.
Deus Machina.
Yeah, it'll jumpstart him into to waking up.
So here was my first issue or when I realized.
But before you get into that.
Okay.
So he falls into it. And that's when Monkey Bone rescues him.
Yes.
From that. And so you start to think they've got a relationship. Monkey Bone's going to save him. They're going to work together. But then you find out Monkey Bone steals his free pass and goes into the real world and takes over his body.
So here we go. Here's the turn. Here's when the movie went from this could be cute. This could be kind of like a psychological analysis / entertaining, creative, artsy movie.
What Dreams May Come meets Beetlejuice.
There you go. I would like to see that movie.
Yeah.
This is not that movie.
No.
But it got me thinking about, who does this type of movie well? And Edgar Wright came to mind, mostly because I've seen three of his movies within the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
One for the first time. Have you seen World's End yet?
Not yet. I want to see that. I'll probably see it tomorrow.
Okay.
As if that matters to the podcast listener.
Tomorrow being, we don't know when, because this is timeless. That's right. See it. It's good. It's funny. I'll say it's probably on par with Hot Fuzz. I still like Shaun of the Dead the best.
Yeah.
But definitely see it. He's one of the best filmmakers working right now. But what he does really well in Scott Pilgrim and again in At World's End, I'm not spoiling anything by saying this because the commercials are showing. There's robots. There's people walking around with blue light coming out of their eyes and heads and limbs are flying. But he's really good at taking this kind of fantastical premise but grounding it in real characters.
Yes.
So At World's End is no different. The relationship between the characters and the kind of the arc that they make are really what kind of grab your attention and endear you to the characters.
Uh-huh.
Meanwhile, it doesn't matter what's going on around it, how fantastical it is, because you've now grounded it in real characters and you can do whatever the fuck you want.
He's great at making you invest in the characters.
Very
he
much
makes
so.
The characters real enough for you to identify with. So you agree to go on that adventure with them.
Yep. Scott Pilgrim being the same way, which is that first half hour. I don't want this to be an Edgar Wright podcast.
It's all good.
But I have to compare
it's
and contrast.
It's far more interesting than Monkey Bone. No, you're right. The first half hour of Scott Pilgrim, it's all setting up the characters.
Yeah.
It's not until they actually get, because it's still cute and look at that weird video game reference, the P-bar.
Right.
But it's not until they get to that club and Matthew Patel comes bursting through the roof when you actually get a feel for, this is what the movie's going to be like.
Yeah.
But at that point, you've already agreed to go on this journey with these characters.
You've bought in and that's why it works.
Yes.
So this one, Monkey Bone does not earn the right to do that because the characters, again, we've already pointed out, we're still kind of fuzzy on motivations and why and backstory and who and what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And then it throws this twist because, like I said, I was willing to see this as kind of a he's got this dual personality. I'll even give you the part about Monkey Bone taking over his body.
Uh-huh.
That's fine. Okay. Because it's still kind of grounded in science. So we could go into a coma and wake up a different person. Maybe they were schizophrenic to begin with and they've swapped, the dominant becomes the submissive. Fine. But he can see Bridget Fonda's dream. That
he
was my
able
first
to
clue.
See Bridget Fonda's dream and he's banging at it. He's like, Julie!
How are they connected? And then we find out later in the movie because he breaks the glass in his dream and it wakes her up. And it's kind of a, it's a point near the end of the movie where she realizes.
That's like the middle of the movie, Joel.
No. But he's trying to convince her. We'll get to that in a second.
Oh, God.
But it's like, okay, so that actually, how is that explained? Because now
really
we're out of the realm of, now we're into supernatural.
Well, at that point, she even goes to like her science, her dream science team, and is like, guys, he spoke to me.
Yeah.
And we need to kick him full of the nightmare juice. He was like on a nightmare loop. For 4 hours, first of all, it's way too late for first of all, but the passage of time is so unclear in this film. Like, they go from a day to like 3 months in the snap, you know, just ridiculously fast. You have no idea. I guess just when you're in, it's like Inception. When you're in a coma,
time moves slower.
It's only like, apparently it's the opposite though. Like, you're in the coma for maybe 2 seconds, but it's been 3 months in the real world.
Yeah.
It just goes by at too much of a, like, just blinding pace that you still don't get a chance to get your bearings. And it's not like in that good way like Luhrmann did in Moulin Rouge.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, everything's kind of frantic at the very beginning.
You're just along for the ride.
And you're just kind of along for the ride. And it isn't until, like, you start to kind of meet Satine and you're able to kind of calm down and you get the story. But that works. The way Luhrmann sets up the story, it works like that.
Yeah.
This doesn't work.
No.
It's ever trying to find its pace. It's ever trying to find its motivation. The most explanation you get for anything in this movie, why do things happen? Because. That's yeah. I mean, that's pretty much the only explanation you get. Why are they trying to why do they send Monkey Bone? Like, apparently in Coma Land, you know what's going on in the real world all the time. And, you know, the god of comas, the god of nightmares.
Yeah, Arsenio Hall.
Exactly.
In the devil costume.
Giancarlo Esposito, that's his
name.
There
you go.
It's like his plan to send Monkey Bone out to infect everybody with the nightmare juice that Bridget Fonda created to feed his kingdom full of nightmares.
Yeah, because it's like Monsters, Inc. Like, they run on screams.
So, like, what? But... So, like, did he coordinate the coma? Like, did he coordinate the accident that put Brendan Fraser in the coma?
I think he was just taking advantage of a good opportunity.
Okay.
But again, yeah, how does he know what's going on in the real world?
Exactly.
Yeah.
There were just too many, like, wow, you guys didn't really think that out. It was just kind of because.
Well, they were hoping they threw too many, like, colors and costumes and things at you that you'd stop questioning and, like you said, just go along for the ride.
Yeah.
And I would have been willing to if that ride was entertaining. Instead, it turns out to be a fucking Texas Giant from Six Flags.
Oh, God,
it kills people. So the moment that, from the point, was about halfway through the movie when Monkey Bone, his alter ego, we're led to believe, takes over Brendan Fraser's body, wakes up, goes up into the light, the Great Emancipator's light, wakes up. And so now in the real world, Brendan Fraser has the mind of Monkey Bone.
At this point, we're 45 minutes into the movie.
Wow.
We're like halfway through the film.
Yeah.
And he's just now getting back out of the coma where we start to set up the identity crisis.
Yeah.
This is the main conflict of the film. Yeah. And it's halfway through the movie. It's way too late. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. from here on out, it's just like Brendan Fraser's embarrassing himself. Like, I was trying to think who could have done this role and made it not as embarrassing as it is. Yeah. But he has to be a monkey, so he's like jumping around and he's making these noises.
I think it should have been Chris Kattan the whole time.
Chris Kattan actually
as the
almost
Miley
saved
character.
This movie, right?
Yeah.
He could have been. He's already. Jeff is giving me like looks.
It's,
like, Chris Kattan has never saved
anything.
It's
the most ridiculous concept.
Let alone
it really
his career.
Is the most ridiculous thought that Chris Kattan would save a movie, but he really is. Him and Bridget Fonda.
That moment
are
at the end?
The best things in that movie.
Yeah.
They're the best parts. Maybe Bob Odenkirk. I'll give Bob Odenkirk.
Oh, yeah, he's
a little
great
bit.
Too.
Yeah.
But that was my takeaway that, like, Brendan Fraser just wasn't up for this task. But who would have been?
It should have been Chris Kattan as Stuart Miley.
All right,
he should have been Stuart Miley because then you would have bought more of the monkey mannerisms.
True, true.
You know, it seems so weirdly miscast.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen him be Mango on SNL.
Yeah.
And you've seen him do the man child, the man monkey, whatever the hell that is.
Yeah.
Bubbles?
Bubbles. It is Bubbles. Where, yeah.
And he's like eating the orange or eating the apples and stuff. You've seen him do it. Cast him as the cartoonist. To end up acting like a monkey later in the film.
Now, I think the problem was that he's too cartoony. I don't think that they thought audiences would believe him as an actual human to see the transformation into monkey. And I could see that. But Brendan Fraser sure as fuck couldn't do it. Oh, my God.
No.
So, he's forced to, you know, jump around and do these embarrassing things. And he's just like an unlikable douche.
And there's something about the way that Brendan Fraser, like his first few movies, I tend to like Brendan Fraser in a few films.
Me too.
Like, I think he's got a natural charisma, a way that you kind of like him. I liked him in Encino Man, for what it's worth. Sure. He didn't really say shit, but he was okay. He was likable in that. Yeah. I liked him in School Ties. I liked him in Bedazzled, the Bedazzled remake. I liked him in the Mummy movie, Mummy movie.
I especially like him in the Mummy movies. Jeff is gesticulating wildly over there. What are we forgetting? Blast from the Past. With
Alicia,
what's her name?
Alicia Silverstone.
Okay, all right, fine. It's a good movie.
Allowed to add anything into the podcast.
I thought he worked well, though, but like you said, in The Mummies, where he's kind of doing this Harrison Ford tough guy thing, but he still gets a little bit of comic relief.
First one.
Oh, well, yeah.
I'll give him the first one.
Nobody comes out unscathed from those sequels. Let alone The Rock.
But he started off fairly likable, but I've got to tell you, like, I don't like him. Even when I watch him in movies, he kind of seems like that bad dinner theater actor.
Yeah.
I get that from him a lot. And I just kind of, as much as I sit there and I'll watch his movie and go, God, I want to like you, but I don't. Because you kind of seem like you only give it like 60%. And I'm not enjoying this at all.
And even in the first act of this movie where he's trying to be like the everyman and relatable. And, oh, I'm just this little cartoon character or artist who's caught up in this world. He comes off as kind of gay, actually. Uh-huh. And I don't mean that in, oh, that's gay. I mean, like, I think he's homosexual. Yeah, it's like, why is he with Bridget Fonda? Why is she wasting her time with this guy?
She's a great beard.
With this man-child.
Brendan Fraser comes out of it, and he's acting like a monkey. He's running around. He's being outlandish. And, wow, I was in a coma. Oh, my God. And
that voice
talking to the press. And apparently when a cartoonist goes into a coma and then comes out of it, like, it's national news. There's a million press people hanging out in his front yard.
Yeah, of course.
What the hell? No one cares. No one cares when a cartoonist comes out of a coma.
Oh, and especially, so like the beginning of this movie, they set up that, you know, he's this cartoonist, and now they've made like a Simpsons, like a TV show based on it.
Yeah.
But what they show is not funny or entertaining. No. It's like, this show would get shit canned so quickly. I'd watch Bob's Burgers on reruns before.
It looked like Dr. Katz, but like done by an NYU student.
No, it's very student film.
Where they were trying to explore like a deep meaning to this animated monkey. It wasn't funny. No, you're absolutely right. It wasn't funny at all. And that's kind of part of the problem. One of the many problems of this movie is that who was it marketed to?
That's the thank you. Yes, because when Brendan Fraser is now wakes up from the coma as Monkey Bone, there's this really awkward, like almost sex scene with Bridget Fonda, where he's like seducing her, and it's played for laughs, but it made me uncomfortable.
Right,
I was very uncomfortable watching this in my. I mean,
but there's that. There's also like there's I'm not gonna get in the goddamn bag.
Yeah, like there's some cursing.
It gets kind of weirdly dark, weirdly adult. And you're like, what?
And the imagery is very nightmarish. Of course, that one nightmare that he keeps having that's in black and white where he's being, like, operated on.
Oh, yeah.
Although, I did enjoy the doggy version of that nightmare. So the dog has the same. He's got a dog. What's the dog's name? It's a sidekick.
Oh, Scouter. I can't remember what his
Ranger
name was.
Ranger or something like that. Yeah. But, yeah. At some point, the dog gets a hold of the nightmare juice, which is now in gas form, and has a nightmare, and he is in that scenario. But instead of like a doctor or nurse, there's like cats.
Cats with scissors.
And it's really entertaining.
To castrate him.
Because they're actual cats.
Oh, my God.
I was laughing more at like what it must have been like behind the scenes to shove a cat up into this costume with like a huge scissors and scalpels.
You know, they got like, okay, we're shooting the cat scene today. It's the cat scene. I got to figure that had to have been what was on the production sheets.
The cat scene.
No, that was actually a very genuinely funny part of the film.
Laughed out loud. I'm glad PETA didn't shut that one down so we could all experience
and,
that.
And Joel, it was only an hour into the movie when we finally got to that point.
Oh, God.
So while Monkey Bone is wreaking havoc and he's trying to, like, you know, enjoy all the money, he's trying to now merchandise and capitalize on everything that he's got going on in the real world. Stuart is still in coma land.
Yes.
Trying to figure out how to get out.
Yeah.
And what he ends up, Rose McGowan gets him the keys to break out of prison.
Yes, because she's always liked him, I guess. We don't know why.
Yeah, there's no history. We don't know what's going on, but she's always liked him.
That's the other thing. In like coma world, he knows everybody. They know him. But again, it's not his own personal subconscious. Uh-uh. It's shared.
It's collective.
We're led to believe. So that's weird. Meanwhile, Monkey Bone is trying to mount Bridget.
He's trying to mount Bridget Fonda
in the real world.
And that's when Monkey Bone, you know, he has a dream. And he's visited by the god of nightmares. That's who's right. Like, listen, I didn't send you up there to have a fucking good time. I sent you up there to get the nightmare juice. So go get the nightmare juice and let's start wreaking havoc. So he like busts into Bridget Fonda's lab.
Why is he beholden to him, by the way? Why wouldn't he just tell him to fuck off?
I don't
know.
Because
he says, like, when you dream, you're mine.
You're mine.
And it's like, all right, but I'm going to wake up tomorrow. So
I'll wake up.
Fuck off, is right? What I would say.
So he ends up going to the lab and mm-hmm. steals the nightmare juice, but
yes.
then gets, like, accosted by a monkey in a cage.
Oh, yeah.
And he, like, kisses the monkey.
That was really awkward. This is Brandon Fraser, everybody. He actually kisses a monkey.
Yeah.
But he's like, it's almost like the monkey's seducing him,
uh-huh.
and he's like, not now, baby.
He's like, not now, baby, but maybe later.
But he uses it to, like, get the key from the monkey, and it's like, wow, this is really inappropriate. Again,
who is this marketed to?
This movie's, like, sexual and nightmarish, uh-huh. but way too childish for, like, adults.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
It couldn't find its tone. So he ends up stealing the nightmare juice and makes a deal with these guys who wanted to make a monkey bone figure.
That's right.
That comes with, like, it's got its thumb in its ass.
Yeah. And so,
when you pull the thumb out, it farts.
And here's another problem. So, the real Brandon Fraser, like, this shielded comic book writer, you know, kind of misunderstood. This isn't the type of character that you would think he would create.
Uh huh.
Like, it's so, like, immature, but nothing about that character makes you think that, you know, this in his world. So, again, that dichotomy.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just still like,
yeah.
I can't believe that. So that monkey bone figures, he's going to go ahead and he'll spread the poison by filling it in the monkey bone figures that fart.
So this is, I was sitting there watching this as he's injecting the nightmare juice into the ass of the monkeys and then testing it out. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in like the pitch meeting for this movie when this scene comes up. And they have to explain how he's going to inject. Oh, no, he's just going to inject this purple nightmare juice into this monkey's ass. If I walked in the middle of that meeting, I'd be like, red light. Fuck it. You're out of here. Go make Nightmare Before St. Patrick's Day because we're not greenlighting this piece of shit.
From the minds that brought you Thanksgiving, it's monkey bone.
But yeah. It's like, it's so childish.
It's very childish. It's horrible. It's a horrible plot. It's so ill-conceived. And like last minute and just like we need to manufacture more drama. We need to manufacture another conflict in this movie that we're still not going to rectify.
Yeah.
We just need to throw more problems in there so that way the audience becomes more invested.
Confused.
And it's horrible. So Brendan Fraser breaks out of prison in coma land, busts into death land,
uh-huh.
and then gets caught
yep.
by death again.
Whoopee.
And like pleads his case. So she's like, all right, I'll tell you what. That's fine. I'll send you back to the world of the living, but you're going to need a new body. Oh, I think I got just the thing. And kicks him into through the ceiling
yep.
and into the body of Chris Kattan, who's an organ donor. He's actually like a gymnast who died, broke his neck.
He's a corpse. He's like an Olympic gymnast corpse. And this is the point in the movie where it was like the point of no return.
Ooh, 30 minutes
Bridget Fonda
left. Very good reference.
I didn't even mean to do that.
30 minutes left in the film.
This is where it went from, okay, I could have bought that this was all internalized. I could have bought that coma world was all in his head. I could have bought that he had this ulterior personality, this monkey bone. It's uh-huh. also all internalized. Hell, I'll even give you the fact that Bridget Fonda thinks he was in her dream or vice versa.
Right.
This is inexcusable.
Yeah.
Now we're going into, again, supernatural realm.
A complete stranger's body.
How does somebody's consciousness get it? This is way too silly, even for me.
How can your consciousness go into a dead person's body? He doesn't even have organs. He's a fucking zombie.
And I feel like if this is how this happened, like this should happen all the time. Like a dead body should be waking up with the personalities of consciousness in them. And again, I know it's a movie. I know, you know, Inception wasn't real, but I buy Inception.
But they at least in Inception, they created science in the movie, and then they stuck with the science that they created for the movie.
That's a good point. This movie sets up rules and then breaks them.
Yes.
Or it breaks rules you didn't even know they had.
Uh-huh.
Apparently it has no rules.
There are no rules. So
we can bring the living or the dead back to the living.
Exactly. He breaks into Chris Kattan's body.
Yes.
While Chris Kattan's organs are being removed by Bob Odenkirk.
Bob Odenkirk.
And his team of doctors.
Yeah.
And he gets up and he like just... problem with Chris Kattan's physicality is really amazing.
No, yeah, he's totally channeling Vincent D'Onofrio from Men in Black in this movie, where he, you know, Vincent D'Onofrio is the bug who's running around, so he's like, oh, he's got the crazy voice going on.
Oh,
his
yeah.
head's out of whack because he's a dead person.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Chris Kattan does this.
So he busts out of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this gang of doctors are, like, hunting him down and, like, screaming shit like, those are my organs. Come back here. That's our body.
Well, he sets up, like, at the while he's on the operating table, Bob Odenkirk takes out a spleen or something. He's like, this is a new Mercedes right there. It's like,
yes.
What the fuck did? Well, first of all, I don't,
it's like
I'm pretty sure.
Black market? Are they
pretty sure that's not how organ donors work. Are they really worth that much? And are trained doctors like, hey, there's another Rolex.
We
got a spleen. I don't think that's how it works, but okay.
But meanwhile, they chase after him like they're watching their organ farm just take off. So
yeah.
they run out of the hospital. They get into an SUV with the windows already down.
Yep.
Because,
I love that.
Because if you're filming something, you don't want the reflection of the window to
exactly.
show your crew. So the window's already down. They get in the car and they take off. And it apparently takes Chris Kattan like 4 seconds to run back home from the hospital.
Right.
Where he gets the keys. And that's when we see Harry Knowles.
Yep. Watering his plants.
Watering his plants from the second floor window.
Well, you've seen him. He's not very... His mobility is...
Who has a hose in the second floor window?
It's a good question. I was so excited to see Harry Knowles that I didn't even question what he was doing.
At first, I was like, is that fucking Harry Knowles? Like, I ended up having to IMDb it, and I was like, that's fucking Harry Knowles.
Yep.
How can his ass do this piece of shit movie with as hard as he is on these other films?
I think he got a kickback. I think looking back on it now, it was...
Oh, hell yes, he
we're
did.
We're going to... You being a little piece of shit, and then
say
you promote
nice.
It on your website.
Yeah.
They got my $8, so...
Oh, yeah.
Fuck you, Harry Knowles.
So Chris Kattan finds out that, like, okay, Monkey Bone... did not take the ring that he was going to give Bridget Fonda originally, and he
right.
grabs that and puts a he puts like a ruler in his back to keep his neck straight.
To keep it straight, yeah.
And then runs to the bus so he can get on the bus and take it to wherever the ceremony is where they're unveiling the Monkey Bone dolls.
That's right. But he's just like a rotting.
These things are coming out of my mouth. I just
again, and somebody had to pitch this. Somebody had to get in front of a bunch of studio execs and were like, "I got this great idea. This is why you should give me $30 million."
People loved it, and people was that the budget on it?
Oh, I'll have to look it up.
Okay.
I'm not sure what it was, but I can't imagine it's much less. I mean, there's animation is not cheap, especially this type of animation. I will throw this out. Henry Selick, again, kind of a bit of a personal hero of mine.
Uh-huh.
This movie notwithstanding. And especially now with Paranorman and Coraline, those are both great movies. He is on the
top
of his. I
haven't seen Paranorman yet, but Ken was telling me on one of the other podcasts that like it was amazing. And
it's
he really
fantastic.
Loved it.
I don't think it's better than Coraline, but Coraline's pretty fucking awesome.
Well, that's Neil Gaiman, man.
Yep, there you go. And I think, was this one Roald Dahl?
I think it was. Yeah.
But really good. But just from a technical standpoint, and the way he frames and shoots, like he is a filmmaker. And the team of animators he have working, they're at the top of their game. And so, granted, this is 10 years prior to these movies, there's still some really good animation. The character of Monkey Bone is nicely animated.
Yes.
I appreciate good animation.
The budget on this film was $75 million.
See, there you go. And half of that must have been costumes, animation, effects.
Do you know how much it brought in?
Okay, hold on. So $70 million to make.
Yeah.
I'm going to say less than 10. 8 or 9.
You are absolutely right. It's
$7,622,365. Jeez. And that's international,
that's
probably?
That's box office. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
that's
it's
horrible.
It's a flop. Well, it did not get good reviews. I think it was a 20% on Rotten Tomatoes when
I
checked
like
it today.
4.5 out of 10 on IMDb.
That's what confused
me.
Yeah. Well, I looked that up before I watched it. And I was like, oh, maybe this movie isn't as bad as I remember. Nope.
No, it's pretty fucking bad.
Somebody at IMDb.
Yeah, so just to wrap up this story. So Chris Kattan as Stuart finally makes his way to the place. Like, he does gymnastics to get into this place.
I did like that.
But while he's doing the gymnastics, like, he's straight up jumped on a pole, and he's spinning, and he jumps on another pole, almost like Jurassic Park 2.
Yes,
and
very much
meanwhile,
so.
The doctors come up to the gate, and they're like, let us in. And the guards are like, no, visitors only. Meanwhile, you just watch this guy. He's doing gymnastics still above your head.
Inches above his head.
And he jumps in, runs in, and starts to call out like, no, Doc. Because that's what he calls Julie, Doc.
Yep.
And, you know, eventually convinces her like, no, it's me. I'm Stuart. And that other guy is Monkey Bone.
Yeah. And of course, at first, she doesn't buy it because she's a logical human fucking being.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's some wordplay and whatever. But that scene between her and Chris Kattan is actually a little endearing, where she starts to realize, and here's the thing, Bridget Fonda, she's kind of a, she looks fantastic, but I can't remember a movie I've seen her in where she's really, like, sold it to me. Like, I don't know that she's superstar.
No.
I'm saying if she has,
I don't think she
ever
was. If she
has Meryl Streep's looks, she does not have a career in film.
No. Nope.
She's fine. She's serviceable. She's better than anything you'll see on TV.
Yeah.
Just not quite a movie star.
No, no. I mean, she does some, she has a couple of good films where she's been entertaining. Like, I liked her in Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
I liked her in Point of No Return. Single White Female, she was okay.
Oh, that's right. Okay, that's not bad.
No, but that's kind of all I can think of when I think of Bridget Fonda.
Yeah. And I don't
think pretty much it.
Much in the same way that Brendan Fraser wasn't up for this role, wasn't up to the task, I don't think she was either.
No.
I don't think she knew what kind of movie she was in, because she doesn't have to do the scenes with the crazy goblins and fucking Whoopi Goldberg and Thomas Hayden Church.
Yeah.
She's all
Whoopi
in
Goldberg
real world.
With the exploding head, by the way.
Oh, that's right. Whoopi Goldberg's head explodes. Whatever.
And she has more.
It's a replacement
head.
She
has more heads.
That was a really bad special effect, too, to watch it come to life.
It was bad.
And nightmare-inducing in its own right. So Bridget Fonda, it feels like she's in a different movie because she's really playing the emotions up high. She has to cry through half of this movie. Uh-huh. And I really feel bad for the girl when you think about like
what she has to work with.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I was just going to say from a character standpoint that like her husband-to-be just went into a coma the day he was going to propose. Uh-huh. And now his body's been taken over by this alter ego.
By a monkey. By a claymation monkey.
Yeah. But she's playing it straight, man.
And now she's got a corpse who's claiming to be her fiance.
Yeah. Don't they kiss? Do they kiss at
some
point?
I don't think she kisses Chris Kattan, no.
Okay, all right.
I don't think she ever kisses him. But then Chris Kattan confronts Mucky Bone.
Yes.
And he's like, get in the pack.
Yeah.
Like,
that's our callback.
Like, what? Like, Brendan Fraser's really? Like, what did you think this plan was going to be? That this human male
who's bigger than you, by the
going way. Was going to climb into a pack? Like,
yeah.
What is this? What is happening here? Who thought up this ending?
Yeah.
So they end up chasing each other, and like Brendan Fraser opens up this pinata that all the monkeys or whatever.
Yes.
Get out, and that's when Dave Foley
gets a face full of it of fart ass
and feels like his clothes are attacking him, so he takes them all off and runs off.
And that's how Dave Foley gets naked in this movie.
That's how he gets naked. So this chase leads them to a huge hot air balloon that they have on top of this museum.
Yeah.
Where Brendan Fraser and Chris Kattan grab onto ropes, and they're basically flying. They make it seem like they're flying all throughout the city, but they've never actually left the backyard of this museum.
That's right.
Meanwhile, Bob Odenkirk and his team of doctors are running around following, because every time Chris Kattan hits Brendan Fraser, an organ comes out. And that was like the most cringe-inducing part of this movie.
This is when it turned into like frat falls and the lowest common denominator of humor. Like a spleen falls out and
some guys are playing football.
Catches it like it's a football.
Catches it. Yeah, and then Bob Odenkirk tackles him.
Yep.
There's another piece that comes out and it falls into a grill.
Yep.
And the guy puts it in a hamburger bun for his
serves
son.
It to a kid.
Oh, my God.
It's like, this is just when the humor couldn't get any worse.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So this ridiculous chase, again, where the balloon, you know, Chris Kattan gets hit by a bus. They're going down the highway. But then when the balloon crashes, because the cop's like, I think I can get it down, and shoots the balloon in the ass, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I noticed that.
And the balloon
bullet hole
flies around, and then Chris Kattan and Brendan Fraser crash with, like, just a lifeless thud.
And it's really kind of jarring
it's
and shocking,
dark.
And you realize, oh, shit just got real.
Because, again, you can't figure out what the freaking tone is to what's going on in this movie. Even up until the last 2 minutes, you don't know what the hell you're watching still.
Yeah.
They go back to the land of the dead or the land of comas or whatever. And as they're falling into the land or whatever, they're fighting in the air. And that's when like a huge like kaiju comes out. It turns into Pacific Rim. This huge robot comes out of the middle of the land and catches both of them. And it's piloted by Death.
Of course.
And she's like, so what happened? Did you find your girlfriend? And she's like, yeah, thank you. I was able to tell her how much I love her.
Mm-hmm. And that's...
I'm yours. And so then she just smooshes Monkey Bone and Stuart together and talks about how, like, well, you're kind of boring on your own. You need a little bit of that wild side in you. What?
But that's totally antithetical to the rest of the movie, which paints him as the villain, you know?
Yeah. But they never really explore, like, how dull he is without Monkey. But, like, they don't explore that at all.
He seemed okay. He got fucking Bridget Fonda and a 12... show deal.
Right. So what is the deal? What are you talking about? We've never talked about how boring this guy is. We've never made that an issue. So when you throw that at the end, it's...
He goes through exactly zero changes.
There's no changes. There's no journey for this character. The only character who goes on any kind of journey at all is the Chris Kattan character. That's it. And he only has 30 minutes of screen time.
And he's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's on the poster of this movie.
Is
he? In fact, the original poster, not the one that they're showing now, but when they first released the movie, it was Bridget Fonda, and then you had Brendan Fraser in the middle, who was dressed in like the monkey bone like suit, the shiny suit.
Yeah.
And then you had like Chris Kattan
on the side.
On the side,
you're right.
And the dude gets. I mean, Bridget Fonda's black coworker gets more screen time than Chris Kattan does, and she's not on the damn poster.
That's a good point. This must have been at the height of his like SNL popularity.
I guess.
Although he was only on that on SNL for what, a couple of seasons.
But
he wasn't there
just,
long.
I mean, he was. I think he was riding the Night at the Roxbury and Corky Romano.
Yeah.
He was riding that into, not that those were hugely successful, but then he also, I think he played the villain in,
was
it? The Eddie Griffin movie.
He was like a smarmy.
Oh my God, Undercover Brother.
Thank you.
And then I think Monkey Bone was like his last little bit of film for a while.
Yeah. Rightly so.
I don't know. Again, with this film, it's just so misguided. I can't even say like, their hearts were in the right place making this film because I don't think anybody knew what they were doing. I don't think anyone understood what was happening. I think the director, what did you say? Tom Selleck?
Henry Selleck. That's right. Henry Selleck.
I think
Magnum PI himself.
He was just looking at it, I think, from a visual standpoint.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, oh, I want to do these visuals. This visual stuff will work. I don't think he had any idea how to direct real live actors.
I think this was a Brad Bird situation, although Brad Bird more successful at him at live action. Brad Bird, by the way, is same thing. Started with animation, did The Iron Giant, and then did a couple of movies for Pixar. The two best movies for Pixar, I would argue, or at least one of them, The Incredibles and Ratatouille.
Yeah.
And then went on to do Mission Impossible 4. But he was, like, hired by the studios. He'd always wanted to do live action. But Mission Impossible 4 is pretty good.
It's not bad. Yeah, it's not bad.
He knows how to direct actors and construct a scene and tension and all that good stuff. But, yeah, I feel like Henry Selick was brought in by the studio. Like, who can direct, who can do the animation side? But still maybe work with actors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I don't want to blame him because you got to go right back to the script, man.
You've got to go to the script because he's got a good track record with these kind of movies.
Exactly.
But with better writers.
Yeah.
So what the fuck, you know? How do we fix this? How would we fix Monkey Bone?
I still think that if you get somebody else in the lead role, there's somebody out there who could have brought some gravitas to this role. And made it not so goofy. That's the problem is Brendan Fraser is not fun to watch at all.
No.
He's like film kryptonite. Like you want to look away. I was alone sitting in my house watching this and like kept looking over my shoulder like, I don't want to get caught watching this movie. That's how bad this is. What would people I know, friends, think of me if you're like I don't even want it to show up on my Netflix queue that I've seen it. Like, how do I erase that? Because now I'm going to get suggestions. Oh, you watched Monkey Bone. You might like
What the hell did
Bob's
I get?
Burgers.
I meant to talk about that.
I'm shitting on Bob's Burgers.
I'm sorry. I don't know what Bob's Burgers is.
It's that cartoon on Fox that comes on after.
Family Guy?
I think Jeff likes it. It's a good show.
It must be awesome if Jeff likes it. So no, when I watched it and it was like I see that you watched Monkey Bone. Maybe you'll like. Oh God, I can't remember what. I think it was like it brought up Expendables and.
Oh my God!
I was like, wow, that's not even the same kind of film.
It's kind of cartoony.
Yeah, I guess
its own way.
So I think with this movie, what they really need, and the thing is, it's kind of lean. It's only like about 90 minutes long.
Yeah, I think there's some stuff on the cutting room floor though.
I think the first thing you need to do with this movie though is you need to come up with. You need to decide, is this coma land like a all-encompassing, or is it just his personal hell? And I think, honestly, like what you were saying, it needs to be a little bit more personal. It needs to be internal. If he's creating these personas of, you know, and they don't even have to be real. These could all just be figments of his persona, of his imagination. The God of Nightmares could be part of him.
It's what it should have been.
Of death, the character of death. Could just kind of represent his own mortality or his own idea of his own mortality.
Right.
And just be him, his own personal thing. You need to retool that story so it's more internal. It's more of a struggle within. So that way it's about this character earning something. He needs to earn something by the end of the movie.
Yes.
Both, you know, by earning his girlfriend back and kind of being the man that she wants him to be, but also learning and accepting something about himself.
That's right. And if Monkey Bone does represent this other thing that he's fighting, that he's not bringing into to himself, then that scene at the end where they merge should have been something more than just like, oh, you've defeated evil, and now it's inside of you.
Something, well, something significant. It should have been something significant, and it should have been a choice that they made.
Yes.
That Monkey Bone and Stuart decide on their own.
It's not really thoughtful at all.
They decide, you know, some kind of thing. Some kind of opportunity for them to come together, to work together, to then earn that enlightenment. And, you know, as they would say in the Hindu religion, move on to the next level, you know, that they would make that choice. It's a lot more poignant if they make that choice to come together.
You took the word out of my mouth.
Instead of death just smushing them together and be like, no choice.
Yep. And then if you remove that, if you make it all internal and make these different characters parts of his subconscious, then you have to remove the plot line where he can come back to life in the body of a corpse.
In the body of a corpse.
That is asking too much of your audience by this point, and that's when you lost everybody.
But, you know, I guess what you do, you run the risk, or is it an opportunity that maybe he finds a way to go back, and then what you get to see, but we saw it in movies like Me, Myself, and Irene, where two personalities are conflicting with each other within the same body. It could be interesting. You know, a la Gollum from, you know, Lord of the Rings, or it could be really bad.
Ooh, there you go. That's how you recast. Get fucking Andy Serkis.
Get Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis. Because he could do the stop motion Monkey Bone, too.
And he could, yeah, he could do both.
Didn't we cast him as, what's his name
as Blanca.
From Street Fighter? Blanca. Thank you. I was going to say Brazil. I just
as Brazil. So. As all of Brazil. That's
we'll
Andy
just
Serkis.
Fire all actors, and Andy Serkis will be everybody from now on.
So a lot more of a personal story.
Oh, great.
I think that you could do what they were trying to do with the and I don't even mind so much some of the creature effects. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some that were really bad, but I think if you're going to go like dark and light, if you're going to go with the duality, pick one and stick with it completely.
Yeah.
Make the dream world completely black and white and make the living world color, or even make the living world black and white, make the nightmare world color.
Yeah.
You know, mess around with that a little bit. And then when you marry the two, that's when you can kind of see some bleed over, some crossover. You know, if you don't have an interesting script, at least make it interesting to watch.
Yeah.
And they did not. I mean, there were a couple of decent visuals, but they didn't succeed on any of those.
Yeah.
I think that the director that you want for something like this, and I dig what you're saying about Edgar Wright. I think Edgar Wright would be a cool director for
it. Oh, he'd been great at this.
I think I would have liked to have seen, God, what is it? He directed The Cell with...
It's one name. Yeah. Tartus.
Or whatever. The Tardis. Whoever. The guy who directed The Cell.
Fucking Jeff looked that up.
Yeah, with J-Lo and what's his name? You said it earlier.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Tarsum.
Yeah. That's his name. Yeah.
I would love to see him direct it.
He's got a good visual style.
Great visual styles. I think that would be fun. I think that now you could get somebody like... God, who could you get to play the cartoonist to play Stuart? As we just like
set the bar too high. I mean, Christian Bale could do no wrong.
Oh my God, Christian Bale is Stuart Miley. I don't know about that. I'm thinking just Stuart needs to be a little bit younger.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking from an acting standpoint. Like, if you can believe him as Batman as a superhero, then he could pull this off. He could do it. He's probably not right.
Yeah.
Who could play Ben Affleck?
What do you think about that, by the way? This is the movie podcast.
That's totally why I brought that up. Why is it? All right, here's the thing. I understand that some people don't like Ben Affleck.
Uh-huh.
But it can't be because of the movies he's directed, because he's fucking best director, or at least directed the best movie of last year. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was the best movie of last year, but still, I've seen Argo. It did a fine job.
I loved Argo. I thought Argo was really a really well-directed film.
Absolutely.
It was really well-directed. It was really well-cut.
It's tense. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and the editing on that is great.
Yeah.
But before that, he did The Town. Okay, so he's a good director. Before he did that, he's in my favorite Kevin Smith movie, which is Chasing Amy. The guy's a great actor.
Uh-huh.
And now he's kind of being punished for his own success.
Yeah.
And I think some people don't like him because of the whole J-Lo thing. I see that as a personal triumph. Like, he almost went down the rabbit hole, and everybody saved him, and he saved himself, and right. ended up with the glorious Jennifer Garner?
Jennifer Garner, yeah. Oh, man, the fantastic. Thing is, I feel like people punish him because of the Daredevil thing.
Not his
like,
fault.
Like you said. No, exactly. You know, like you said, they're punishing him for having too much success. You know, he's an actor. He's going to try to do stuff. Actors have jobs, and it's called acting and doing films.
Right.
Now, if when I watch Daredevil, I don't think, wow, Ben Affleck really sucks in this. I just think, wow, this movie kind of sucks. Yes. And that's not his fault. That's Mark Steven Johnson.
Yeah.
That movie was bad. It was bad all around. It was horribly cast. Mm-hmm. But all of the actors did the best they could with it. I mean, you sit there and you watch that movie and tell me you didn't at least enjoy the Bullseye character.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
For what it is, Daredevil isn't a horrible movie. It's just not, it doesn't reach that bar that's set by other quality superhero films.
And I was just going to say that. And it came out at a time when everyone was like, we'd had the X-Men. And I think we'd had even Spider-Man by this point.
We'd had Spider-Man.
So everyone was running on all cylinders like, oh, superhero movies are the wave of the future. Like, we can do no wrong. And then it was just like Daredevil,
the Hulk.
Elektra, the Hulk, like boom, boom, boom. And we were brought back to reality.
Yes.
So to speak.
I think Affleck has the chops to do it. You know, I watched the scene. In fact, I think I posted a clip from Argo where he's talking about it's the scene you've seen it in the trailer, but it's the full scene where he talks about, I'm the only thing that's between you and a gun to your head. And that's a great, see Bruce Wayne. I see him playing. Plus, at the same time, fanboys, let's calm the fuck down because we don't know how big of a role Bruce Wayne Batman is going to be because it's Man of Steel 2. We don't know how big of a role Batman's going to be in this damn movie anyway. So who knows? It could be he could be in it for the last 5 minutes.
I always thought it was just supposed to be a cameo.
Yeah.
But it seems weird that they're announcing casting of a cameo this far in advance.
So, well, who knows then? I don't know. You know, I assume they're probably going to try to do something like the Avengers movies. You doing okay over there?
Yeah, I've just rolled over my headphone cord in my chair. And
Jeff's over here laughing at you doing something. I'm trying to talk about some really important superhero shit.
I'm listening.
And you're dancing with your headphones.
I got me.
Just in summary, I think Ben Affleck's going to do fine. I think everybody's got to calm the hell down because I know we want to hate. Everybody wants Batman to be somebody else. They all want it to be this other person. You know what? It's going to be okay. I think Ben Affleck's got it.
I totally agree with you. I like that when Joss Whedon came out and supported him, all the nerds were like, does not compute which way to go. I've got on this side of my brain, I know it's wrong, but this guy is telling me he's right and he's my hero.
He's like the Harry Knowles of nerd movies.
Oh, God.
No, but Joss has some cred. So,
Hold on real quick, though. So, yes, I agree. Ben Affleck, he'll be great. He can do it. He has the chops. Nothing personal against him. I do understand when you want to invest in this character or forget, you know, that there's an actor playing this character and just get lost in the character.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a superhero movie. And I think the only complaint that I'll say is valid is it's going to be hard to see past Ben Affleck into Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
I mean, you know, Christian Bale wasn't, I'm getting a thumbs up from Jeff over here. Christian Bale wasn't huge when Dark Knight came out. I mean, he wasn't a household name. So I think it was a little easier for people to buy into him as, okay, this is Bruce Wayne. Ben Affleck has too much baggage.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. Every time you watched Heath Ledger perform as the Joker, did you see Jake Gyllenhaal's cock in his mouth?
Yes, is the answer, actually. Oddly enough, it's funny you should ask that because I've always seen his cock in Heath Ledger's mouth.
Never mind.
No.
My point is completely defeated.
But again, he was able to hide behind, you know, literally and figuratively, this makeup and the voice and the character. He was unrecognizable as Heath Ledger.
Uh-huh.
Ben Affleck, there are going to be scenes where he's not Batman, where he's Bruce Wayne, and that ain't Bruce Wayne. That's fucking Ben Affleck.
But whose fault is that?
It's Ben Affleck.
No. Whose fault is that we can't see, you know, somebody else when they're portraying that character? Whose fault is it that we're not willing to suspend disbelief because we're too hung up on who this actor is?
No, you're right. I don't know. I don't know that the word "fault" is the right word to use because it's very accusatory. But it's like,
well, that's my gig, man. That's what I do.
Well, there's the difference between the Tom Cruises, the Nicolas Cages of the world, who Al Pacino now at this point. They're always playing themselves. De Niro, I'll throw into that category too. They're never playing. Jeff's angry. They're never, I gotta stop looking at him. They're never playing other characters because we can't see. Like, Tom Cruise is always Tom Cruise. He's fucking Jack Reacher in this. He's Ethan Hunt in
except
this.
Except for in Tropic Thunder.
And again, because he's in a fat suit.
Are you
he's
saying that the
behind.
Only way that someone can be a good actor is in a prosthetic suit? Are you telling me like The Clumps was the best movie you've ever seen?
No, but I'll stand behind Nutty Professor. That's a tour de force performance. One Mr. Eddie Murphy. No, but he... it's not that you have to do that for good actors, but they're so recognizable. Again, he's a victim of his own success.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm looking forward to him as Bruce Wayne, but I understand that it's going to be difficult to get past the fact that, you know, I'm going to look at him
that's
and be like,
point.
He's going to go home and fuck Jennifer Garner.
That's a good point. Exactly. And he lives a horrible
not
life.
Not Pepper Potts.
He lives a horrible life.
I know, it just merged two words.
Oh, my God.
That was to piss off the comic book.
So I think the point of this whole discussion about Ben Affleck is it's far more interesting to talk about Batman than it is to talk about Monkey Bone.
Yeah. He could have been in Monkey Bone, right? Is that what you're saying?
Is there? God, if he was, who would he have played?
That's a good point.
The Dave Foley character. that's what I'm saying. All right. So is there anything about this? What in this movie, and we've probably already covered it, and, you know, just the usual questions about these films. What in this movie did they get right?
I can't say the art direction in general, because again, you've got these shitty throwaway, like Marty Sidcroft, like looking puppets, that don't work, that look like they were trying to be nightmarish, but somebody didn't have enough skill. Like, they just look cheap. They look plastic. It's obviously a guy in like a suit and a fake head.
Yeah.
You see better shit at like Six Flags.
Yes.
But on the other side of that, there's some really great like set design. Mm-hmm. There's some interesting costume design going on. And again, the stop motion animation work on Monkey Bone himself by the team, my Henry Selick's team, is really good.
Uh-huh.
So that part is successful. And Bridget Fonda in that tight ass dress at the end.
Yeah. I'm with you on the Bridget Fonda thing. That's pretty much the only thing I feel like that and the dog nightmare sequence.
that's clever as well.
I feel like that's it, but it's not worth the price of admission.
No.
Even at the price of free that I paid on Netflix. what about this movie was the most unforgivable to you?
Brandon Fraser. He kills it. He's not up for the task. The monkey, like when the monkey is taken over his body, he's just embarrassing to watch. And again, like you mentioned it earlier, the scene where he's like, let's rub butts. And that's how we seal the deal.
The let's rub butts. The this is my refrigerator where I keep my food. This is my oven where I cook my food.
Yeah.
This is my table where I eat my food. Like, you know, somebody was like, hey, Brendan, can you like improv something when you come in here? And he's like, oh, I got it. And he did it. And they probably laughed. That's funny, man. That's funny. All right. What a great ad lib. We've got it in the can. And then like it just hit the editing room. And like some poor editor was like, this is shit.
Yeah. I'm going to have to.
I've got nothing. I've got to go through line. I've got to hit this point right here where he talks about the money, but it's all one singular shot. I can't. Oh, fuck me. Yep. I've got to leave it in.
Got to look at 20 takes of him waving his ass in the air and doing that horrible monkey voice and figure out which one's the least offensive.
Yeah. I would probably say that it's a combination. It has to be a combination. You know, Brendan Fraser didn't please me, but the thing is, I've seen him in movies where I've liked him.
True.
So I've got to put this on Henry Selick.
Oh, no.
Because he couldn't direct.
Yeah.
He could not direct his actors. The only strong performances we got from the actors was John Turturro as a voice performer.
He's good.
And Bridget Fonda, who I think, you know, we talk about how she wasn't really great, but I think she's the most seasoned out of all the actors in this movie.
I think she's good in this movie. She's just in a different movie than everybody else is in. And I want to see that movie.
Yeah.
With nothing but Bridget Fonda
that dress. The writing was horrendous.
Yeah. They're the big losers.
There was no point. There was no motivation, no point. Nothing paid off. They did the first half of a Chekhov's gun on so many things and then never brought it back later. And, you know, sometimes if the movie's good enough, if the story's solid enough, that's okay. But when it's not, you better pay off. When you're wasting 5 minutes of my time earlier in the movie doing something, it better fucking pay off later. And if it doesn't, you're going to have to answer for that. Like, why? As a filmmaker, why did you make that choice? It was a horrible choice. You're wasting everybody's time. You're not good at your craft. Give it up and sell paint at Home Depot.
Wow, scathing.
And those are my thoughts on Monkey Bone. Do we have anything else?
That may be the most upset I've seen you at any of them. Even FDR, well, you were like, there were some funny moments.
I'll tell you, man. It gets worse and worse. Rough.
Well, good. I'm glad I could finally show you a movie that's worthy of being as awful to be on this podcast.
I appreciate it. And you can, if you want to watch the movie, it's on Netflix streaming. You could check it out if you want. If you have any suggestions for movies that you'd like us to see or talk about, we've got our Facebook group. Just look up The Editing Bay on Facebook. We've also got the Next Wave Radio Network page that you can go up there and kind of tell us what you think about any of the other shows. Want to thank you for listening. Thank you, Jeff, for staying late. I know this one went long. Thank you, Joel.
Oh, thank you. As always, it's a pleasure.
It's my pleasure, sir. Oh. And we are The Editing Bay. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.